This is the last of a three-episode series focused on the changelog. Episode 200 kicked off the series with keepachangelog.com and Olivier Lacan. In 201, we had Ned Batchelder discussing Scriv, and now in 202, Hinnick joins the show to discuss Town Crier. Town Crier is used by Twisted, PyTest, Pip, BuildBot, and Adders, among others. Welcome to Test and Code. If you've found value in this podcast, could you do me a favor? Could you go over to pythontest.com and look either in the top menu bar or in the bottom footer? And there's a few links we're going to talk about. Contact is how you can get a hold of me. Newsletter is how I can get a hold of you. And support is how you can find links to things like my book, the PyTest book, PyTest courses, the community where you can ask questions, and that's about it, really. I'd really appreciate if, especially if you could sign up for the newsletter. I'm trying to collect emails of people that might be interested in similar topics. So you got involved with Town Crier through Twisted? Is that right?
Yes. Town Crier grew out of the Twisted ecosystem. It was written by Amber Brown, also known as Hawk Owl, which I probably don't know how to pronounce. There's way too many W's for my Middle European tongue to pronounce properly. And yeah, it started as a Twisted tool. And over the years, it got quite widely used. But it always had a bit of a problem with not getting enough love, mostly regarding documentation. It's okay. A big problem, but still it was used by big projects like Pip, for example, is using it.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. Or Adders, for that matter. I've been using it for a long time.
And I noticed it because PyTest uses it as well.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. So it's on one of those tools of automating the changelog. Is that too
yes.
simple? Or
I mean, in a way, it's maybe more too general. It's not about automation. It's about avoiding merge conflicts on the changelog. That is the sole reason for it to exist. This is the reason why Blurb exists, or Scriv, or Reno, and what name you. All these tools just want to prevent the situation that multiple people have open pull requests and try to write their changes to the changelog at the same time and just keep having conflicts between those, because if it's a flat file and the order is the same, then you get conflicts. So these tools allow you to put this changelog entries into separate files that have unique file names, and you assemble them to a changelog when you release the file, release the software, like the next version. And this way, you cannot have merge conflicts on a changelog, because the changelog does not exist until you release.
Okay. Yeah. So you're not going to have merge conflicts because everybody's merge has its own fragment or file fragment?
Yes. Okay. It's called news fragments usually.
Okay, news fragment. So I was just like looking at, so that I had something to look at. I've been looking at the PyTest. So in the PyTest repository, there's a changelog directory with these fragments in it.
Yes.
Is that normal? Do I need to name it changelog, or I assume that, or does Town Crier let me specify what directory it's in? Or
yes, you can configure almost everything. You can decide how you call the directory or how to call the file that the changelog is written to. It's all configurable, and the file format is also not set. You can use restructure text, or you can use Markdown. You can use whatever.
Okay, you can use Markdown, because I heard some bashing that you couldn't use Markdown with Town Crier.
Yeah, well, people love to bash what they don't know. But this is the problem, is that Town Crier never had great documentation. And this is what I'm working on right now, because I want to fix it, because this is unnecessary. Like Town Crier suffered unnecessarily because it had features that nobody knew about, and I'm trying to change that.
So. Oh, cool. Well, looks so Markdown's one that you can have files in Markdown. Any other cool features that we might not know about?
Well, it depends what you understand under cool. It's mostly you have the need that you don't want conflicts on your changelog. And Then you decide between the tools that are available. And I think the most common ones are Blurb, which is from the CPython community, which is only made for CPython. So you shouldn't be able even to use it. So that's right out. Then there's Reno, which is coming from OpenStack, which has a different philosophy entirely because the fragments stay fragments the whole time.
Oh, really? Okay.
It does assemble a changelog, but it doesn't delete the fragments afterwards. This is what Town Crier does. Town Crier and Scriv, which I will talk later about, both when you release and assemble your changelog will delete the fragments. With Reno, they stay around.
Okay. So the workflow is similar to Scriv then, or... Maybe it's all, yes. Maybe all of these. So if I make a change, so if I, let's say I've got a bug, I'm fixing a bug.
Yes.
And I have it on a branch, maybe a fork also. But I don't think the tools really care about that. Do they?
Depends. So Scriv cares about, your Git branch and your Git username.
Okay.
Reno, I think, doesn't. I don't know that much about it, but Town Crier does not. Town Crier cares only about one thing, and one thing only, and that's the ID of the pull request. That's the number that you have in a file name. The news fragments have a fixed format, which is the number of the pull request, then a dot, and then the type of the fragment. And the types are assembled to groups together.
Okay, so like in looking at the PyTest stuff, there's a number, and so there's bug fixes, improvements, deprecation, doc. So this is cool. Trivial feature. I guess these are not. Are these defined by Town Crier, or are these can be anything?
They can be anything. Those are they are defaults, and they are clearly not the defaults which they're using here in PyTest. There's one feature that Town Crier has, and I suspect that's what this trivial thing is, that you can define a category which is not printed. And then it just says, also the following issues or pull requests have been closed, and it's just a list of numbers.
Okay. Well, like, if I were to, change something because the spacing was wrong or weird, you don't need to list that, so... Non-functional changes.
Yeah, well, there's changes that do not affect the user at all. That are just something for the developers.
Oh, okay. So it could be even like updating some comments and something that's important, or refactoring.
Exactly.
Okay. I'm still a little confused. So I've got a bug fix, and I'm kind of feigning confusion because I really was confused a couple weeks ago, but I've talked to a couple people and I'm starting to understand this. But Okay, so I've got a bug fix. I've got, like, let's say I've a fix for PyTest. So I've forked it, and I've got it on a branch, and I have a fix. It's at what point do I fill out the fragment? Because I don't. Until I open a merge request, I don't have this number thing yet. So,
yeah, you don't. So either you just look and guess, or you open it first and then you add the fragment. This is this is a bit annoying. Like, I usually just push it, open a pull request, then add the fragment, and then force push it again. So I don't have a extra commit for it. But this is, you can do it however you want.
Okay. But I could, I could do an extra commit and just push to the pull request.
Yeah.
Okay. Or I try to pull request to something, and one of the other maintainers says, "Nice, but could you fill out one of these these news items.
Or that. I mean, at this point, there's different integrations that will do this automatically for you. Okay. Town Crier has a command for it too. It's called Town Crier Check, and it will check if your branch has a news fragment associated with stuff that is not on the main branch. And there's also GitHub Actions for that. So this is automated. So it doesn't have to be always the maintainer who is going to pester you.
Okay. Automated pestering. That's always good.
Yeah, it's the best. Nobody takes this personally.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, but otherwise you've got the little file fragment, and you said the format inside doesn't matter.
It does not.
Okay.
Also the suffix doesn't matter. So you can, like, for example, in my own project, I like to have it end in .rst or .md, so I can tell. So my editor knows what it is and give me syntax highlighting and everything. Okay. But that's voluntary. For example, Town Crier doesn't use those file type suffixes. And I don't know if.
Well, how does it?
Python does, but. Yes.
Okay. You said it does. It can do restructured text or markdown.
Yeah. I'm just talking about the file name right now.
Right. But if you don't do it by extension, how does it know what you're using? Do you configure it?
Doesn't really care. Like Town Crier doesn't care at all. Because you define a template, which is a Jinja file.
Okay.
And then you define how you iterate over the sections and how you render them into the file. And at no point does Town Crier interpret the data that is restructured text or markdown or something completely different. It doesn't really matter because you can do it however you want.
Oh, okay.
It's
I get it.
It's just plain text templating, nothing else.
Okay. And so you really are within your template defining what order these groups show up in and stuff.
Exactly. Okay. And how you iterate, like if you use dashes or asterisks or whatever or you don't have to use them at all. You can make them paragraphs or whatever. It's just a template.
And then at the end, when a merge actually happens, or actually, it doesn't matter. Things are merged. A bunch of stuff gets merged in. So we've got a whole bunch of these news items. And then how does somebody take all of those and turn them into the changelog? Is there like a command or something?
Yeah, they run Town Crier build. And that will do all these things. It will also git rm the fragments automatically. So it will write the changelog and remove the fragments.
Okay. Since there's probably already a changelog there, it like will probably just stick it at the top or something?
Yes. Either it will stick it to the top, or you can add a marker where it should insert it. So it will insert it right behind the marker.
Okay.
I think if you probably can have a look at the PyTest changelog. And okay, no, it's hidden somewhere else.
Oh, yeah.
Right, and if you look inside, there is a dot dot Town Crier release node start. And that's exactly where it will insert the changelog for the next release. At that, behind that line and before the next one.
Okay, and then that stuff isn't something that shows up in the printed version or whatever.
Well, dot dot is a REST comment.
Okay.
So that's invisible by default. So this is something you have to change when you use Markdown. But yeah,
it works. Yeah. Okay. Well, cool. One of the things that I was curious about. So the main goal of this is like you said, to avoid merge conflicts because, right. So if we just had the manual, if we just had the changelog and people edited that themselves, one, they don't, I mean, that is something that some people do. You just have instead of a version at the top of their changelog, you'll have like in development or unreleased or something like that. And people can add a line. But then if there's multiple people doing that, you have to manually merge those pieces because it's going to be the same. If you're sticking with the same format, it's going to be the same lines. Yes. And that's just a pain. So this makes it easier. So my question really is, you're not going to have that many merged conflicts if it's mostly just you. So would you use something like Town Crier for a project that is mostly just you maintaining?
I can answer this question with facts. I only use it for headers. This is the only project where I use it. I am considering to use it with StructLog, but okay. Even there, I usually don't have that many parallel pull requests open that it would make a lot of sense.
So for StructLog, so far, and I'm guessing it's because you have more people contributing to adders. It's a pretty
yes.
big project. And then StructLog is starting to grow, I'm guessing. But so what do you do in place? If you're not doing this, are you doing a manual changelog or?
Just regular changelog.md and just write it by hand.
Okay. And when do you do that? Do you do that? Do you try to do it like as you make changes or do you do it like while you're right before release or something?
Oh, yeah. A changelog entry should always be part of the commit that brings the feature, the bug fix. Otherwise, you will forget things. It's just a pain in the butt.
Yeah. Okay. And so it could be a two-stage thing then. You could, like, every time you make a change, you're adding to the change log. But at a release time, you might want to go through and edit those and say, well, that's kind of not important enough to include or something. Do you ever take things out?
Yeah, sure. I always, before I release these bigger projects, I always also go through the documentation, period, and just read the documentation start to end. So the changelog is part of it. And I always find some typos or some unfortunate phrasings or something. So this is part of my workflow anyway.
Really?
But yeah. But the aspiration should always be that the changelog is ready to release at any time. I really believe that. Because you lose context, you lose nuance when you wait months until you work on a changelog. So
you really go... I'm going to come back to this because this is kind of fascinating. You read all of your documentation before a release for a major release?
I mean, it's not always 100%, but I usually go through it. I definitely always read the readme and the okay. index pages. That I do always without exception.
Okay,
usually also cool. introductions and tutorials. I do not read the whole API documentation. That would be a lot of reading.
That's pretty cool though, because those are things that people forget about. Like, and if you improved a workflow, for instance, and there's a better way to do things with something as an initial, like that's often an improvement that people make is like, oh, this was a little clunky before and I've made it the default, what people should do better. But then don't update the tutorial.
Yeah, absolutely. Like tutorials, especially tutorials, should always be read and reread and made sure that they are correct because it's like the first contact for people. And if the tutorial errors out on them, that's not a good starting point for a project.
Okay. But there, so to back to Town Crier a little bit, I do see it now that it's, I guess I didn't notice before that it was under the Twisted group. So it really is a Twisted project. You're trying to make sure, clean up the documentation a bit, maybe add some things that people are not using or add things that people don't know about. Is this taking
literally today? I have submitted, like, 5 minutes before we are recording, I've submitted a pull request with a how-to about using it together with Markdown.
Okay, awesome.
Specifically for the keep a changelog standard. So,
okay, I was gonna ask about that. The keep a change, it fits into the keep a changelog standard as well. Then you can use Downcrier for that.
I mean, there's one tiny problem is that in a keep a changelog thing, you usually have a link to the compare URL on GitHub between two versions. This is something you cannot do with Downcrier currently because you need to know the previous version. So I've just changed it to the link to the tag on GitHub, and I think that's good enough for now.
Yeah, the deltas are kind of cool though. I mean, I'm not saying this is a problem, but it's something that people can manually add to an existing changelog if they wanted to.
Right.
And you know the version, so you could do the delta. But it's kind of neat. We started doing that in one of the projects I work on, and when it's there is some manual bits that we have to do, like the automated part, like extra script that we've done, but to automate what the last version was to stick this in the line. Conceptually you could do that as part of the snippet, I guess, in one of those little news fragments, if you knew what the next version is going to be.
Good. The next version is not a problem because the next version, Downcrier will either find out if it's a Python project, like it can read out a dunder in it, or you can pass it as a dash dash version. So the next version is not a problem. This is why in my tutorial, I do link to the tag. Like click on it and you get to the tag of the release. The problem is the previous version. I mean, sure, this is a solvable problem, right? You could start parsing the changelog or something, but then Downcrier would need to understand
my particular version numbers.
Not just that, but your changelog format. It would have to start parsing it, and that's a lot more complicated than just writing a template out.
Right, and as we've I'm not going to try to tell people how to do this either, but for any particular project, it's automatable if you wanted to figure that out. But it always bugs me when they're wrong. So like sometimes I just built a project of version 191 and it automatically said, what's the difference between .190 and 1.191? But .190 actually was a burned version because our build failed and there was problems, but it got far enough that it burned the version, and so we could have reused it, but I didn't, and so the real delta wasn't between 190 and 191. It was between 189 and 191. So
and that's exactly the problem. It's really not trivial.
I guess it would be
better to just tell people to run a substitution over it or something and not just do everything in that. I don't know,
but also I think it's anyway that I'm just kind of fascinated by all this because it's an interesting thing to I'm actually considering doing this on a couple of projects where I really am the sole person, but I forget what I've done. So it maybe it's the answer really on a solo project is just keep a changelog and have at the top of it the changes you did with the structure, for instance, like I fixed a bug or I added a feature or whatever. But we still have the merge problem. So if I do this on two branches and I don't know which one I'm going to merge first because I'm working on two different problems, I'm still, even with one person, I could have a merge conflict.
Yes.
So it might make sense if that's my workflow of working on many things at once. It still might make sense to use something like Downcrier.
Absolutely. Also, the fact that it forces you to commit a news fragment along with your code is also useful. You can enforce it. You can make sure that you don't forget it.
Yeah, and also the other thing that came up in one of my other conversations was there's commit messages And those are different than it, than these news fragment thing.
Oh, God, right? Yes. Like, just one of my pet peeves. Like, I have two pet peeves about changelogs. The one is when a changelog doesn't have dates. And my other one is when people just recycle commit messages. Because commit messages are a completely different beast from what I want to tell the user. Because the user doesn't care about some implementation details that I've changed for whatever reason, right? They want to know what changed for them.
Right. So commit messages for me, even... I mean, I just always assume the for me at least the consumer of a commit message is myself. When I look back on what I did, if I'm confused by something, I could look back on like some messages. And also, there it's just one line for a whole bunch of stuff, so it's often not enough. But it gives me a hint of what I was working on. So I did these changes because I was fixing bug blah or something. Or attempting to, but like you said, the changelog entry or the news entry should be the user. What's the effect on the user, right? Or possibly, right. If it's a library, the user is a library or an API user or something.
Yes, still a user.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, There's this difference is that also commit messages. I mean. Different people have different opinions, but the majority of people do that the commit messages are in a present tense, like add feature, and changelogs are usually in a past tense. And to me, that makes sense because the commit does that. It adds a feature. And the changelog is a history that you look at and you say, okay, this has been added or this is different now.
Oh, so. Interesting. So instead of like... the tense is, I'm thinking about that. Like I for a bug fix, even I could just add a ED on it. I fixed a bug. So this version fixed something. It's a minor thing, but it's interesting.
I'm sure your listeners will send you emails. So I'm sorry for that, but it is the most common thing is that to keep the commit messages in the present tense. What I've seen too, by the way, which makes a little bit more sense, is that some projects don't use the commit messages, but the titles of pull requests, which also has the upside that you can edit them until you merge them. Actually, you can edit them later too. So,
yeah. So this is like the get using like the. There's like a GitHub action to pull together all the merge titles and stuff like that. But,
yeah. However they do that. I just seen it and I don't like it because I usually or often have more extensive change logs, like more in one line. When I introduce a new API, sometimes I show an example on how to using the API because I want people to get excited right away and I don't want to be limited to one line only. But at least it acknowledges the problem that a commit message is not a message for the user, but for the developer, and promotes the pull request title as the user facing information.
Yeah, I'm actually just like right now looking at your the changelog for struct log because I was curious about the form. Format that you use if it's just you writing the prose anyway.
Yeah, that's just handwritten keeper changelog.
Yeah. And then the and so your hand you are doing the little compare links because you're handwriting them. It's one of the I kind of like it. I mean, the style is kind of cool. I just this is a completely different topic, but I just noticed that one of your recent changes on struct log is you switched to Hatch. Are you involved with the Hatch project at all?
Not directly, but I'm developing a fairly popular plugin at this point, which is Hatch Fancy PyPI README.
Which really?
Allows you, yeah. So the problem with static packaging in Python, which we had before, like with Flit, or poetry is that your PyPI readme, so the landing page on PyPI, can only be either a static string or a static file. So many projects just use their readme and it's the landing page. But I have higher standards than that. I like to extract certain parts of the readme and then maybe add the changelog of the last release. So basically, if you come to PyPI and see a release, then you see immediately what are the changes on that release. And this is why I used the setup.py for a much longer time than I would have looked like liked to do. But now I've written this plugin for Hatch, which allows you to say, give me this file, but only from there to there. Then give me this file from there to there. And finally, replace all these relative links by absolute links. And what do I know? Issue IDs by links to issues.
That's cool.
I like to think so, too.
Okay, because I was just trying to do so for instance, that's one of the issues I've got. So let's say I've got a project that's on GitHub already. And so if I link to documentation within the project, it doesn't, might work fine on GitHub. But then when the readme goes into PyPI, the relative link is just wrong because it's not on GitHub. It's somewhere else.
That's exactly what it's used for. I've added these substitutions because Pydantic 2.0 will use that. It's already merged.
Okay. Okay, cool. So are you involved with Pydantic too? Or do you
No, I'm not. Okay. I just got pulled into this by Ofek, who is the maintainer of Hatch. And he's running around and helping people to migrate to Hatch. And for projects that have interesting PyPI landing pages, he usually lets them use my plugin. For example, he did this with Black too. So yeah.
So is this plugin available now, or is this something you're just?
Yeah, sure, on? Sure. It's already used.
Okay, so is it under your?
Yeah.
How do I find it?
Well, go to my GitHub, okay. And there should be.
Oh, Hatch! It's right at the top. Hatch fancy PyPI readme.
There you go.
Okay, this is cool. So I'm kind of I was a skeptic at first. So I was trying to pull together. It was actually my the talk for PyBay that I was talking about packaging PyTest plugins and specifically simple plugins, I'd like more people to understand the packaging world so that people can share fixtures within projects. So if they just have a cool fixture idea for their project, they can share it. And I started looking through all the mechanism, and one of the happy things I found was that by having all this work fine with PyProject.toml and setup tools, now works, but it's in beta apparently, I don't think they're going to throw it away. But then I found out about Hatch because it's in the Python packaging people's documentation, and it's kind of fun. It's a little bit more, I don't know, you've used Flit too before, haven't you?
Yeah. So to give you a very simple description, it's Flit with plugins. This is how I would describe it overall. It also has a lot of features that I don't use and I'm not interested in at all. Like I don't use the CLI interface at all. I just use Hatchlink, which is the build backend.
Yeah.
And I edit my PyProject.toml files by hand. It has more features. It has basically a tox built in, like, and it's called Hatch environments, where you can define your environments and run commands or whatever, but I don't need any of that, but it has these extra things. But the part that I'm interested in is a very standard conformant build backend maintained by an extremely responsive maintainer who is following all new standards and implementing them immediately.
Okay.
And is also very interested in keeping it everything working well. And yeah, that's it. These plugins was the missing part that I was missing from Flit.
Well, and one of there's some of the other pieces I was missing from Flit too, but the hatch part, you mentioned that it you don't use it all. It does more. And that's actually one of the things I really like about Hatch is it's not an environment that imposes a philosophy on you. It's got
exactly.
It's a tool chest. You can use the tools that you want, and you don't have to use all of them. And
it's very lightweight, and it's also very robust. In the time I've been using it, I never ran into a legit bug, which I cannot say about other popular packaging solutions that shall not be named.
So we kind of got off on a tangent about Hatch, but I do encourage people if they're unhappy with their current packaging things, check out my talk and also Hatch, because Hatch is cool. I'm looking forward to looking at your documentation on how to do Markdown with Downcrier, because I that was going to be a deal breaker for me. I'm like, I don't want to learn restructured text. Too many years in Markdown. And I know that there's limitations. I know that restructured text does things that Markdown just can't. And I guess I'm okay with that.
That's not really true, by the way. So people conflate restructured text with Sphinx. It's mostly Sphinx that has the cool features. And you can use Sphinx with Markdown too, just fine. Okay. By using the amazing, amazing Myst extension.
Okay.
Did that just blow your mind?
Well, I knew about Myst and I played with it a little bit, but I thought that a lot of the stuff that, like pulling in code snippets and stuff like that, I thought that you couldn't do that in Markdown, but you could do it in...
You absolutely can. The only caveat is that the markup in your doc strings for now has still to be restructured text.
Okay. It's worth it for me to try to figure that out. So I'll have to play with that.
It's getting less and less. Like it's really good.
Okay. And this is through the Myst project that allows that, makes that work?
Yes. They're using basically code blocks to add those features on top of Markdown. And it works fine. Like there's a few rough edges, but to me that's worth it because I really like to style my links, and it's so mind-boggling to me that I cannot italicize a link. It's so
But you can with restructured text? Is that
you can't. You can't. Absolutely can't.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Well, gosh, I always learn so much when we talk. That's pretty neat. Any other cool, like, okay, so Hatch is the awesome, Myst is awesome. I haven't used Strucklog before. I played with it, but I actually think that I have a use case for it now. So I might be adding a Strucklog to one of my projects.
Well, I'm very happy to hear that.
But you're one of the, I don't know if I've asked you this before, but I may have. You're kind of maintaining a few projects that are used a lot. Is this you also have a day job and a life. So how much time is spent on like open source stuff?
Oh, this really depends. So I have this arrangement with my employer that I may use like 20% of my time on relevant open source work. And I'm saying relevant also because all the projects that I maintain, we also use internally. So that's one thing. Secondly, I cannot answer this question straight away because I work in binges, basically on everything. So right now I've spent a lot of time on getting Towncrier into shape because I'm very bad at multitasking. And for me, it's better to just spend one day on working on one thing and another day on another thing, and not do three things per day and alternate between them. So Yeah, but the answer to your question really is about 20%, and okay. It's not like okay, Adders is used a lot, but it's also a very major project, so it's not like we have to work on it 24/7 to make it work, to keep it working.
Yeah. Okay. One of the things that I've hit is at other major versions, like for instance, Python 3.10 or 3.11 or a different Python version comes, you have to add tests to make sure that your projects are being tested on the new versions, but then also may have to make some changes. Does that ever hit you, or has it not really happened anymore?
With Stracklock, not really. With Adders, every single time. Okay. Literally every single time. It's mostly around the code that does our slots magic. So you can use slots, something the data class is now added to in 3.10, but it used to be an Adders only feature. And you cannot add slots to a finalized class in Python. So you have to do some tricks. And once you start doing these tricks, you have to do other tricks so other things keep working. And these corners really like to break.
Okay.
And they broke again for 3.11. But we always managed to get it working.
Okay. So do you wait when do you start working on something like that? Or do you have a test that runs against just mainline Python?
So with Adders, it's usually that at some point we get approached by some Linux distributions, usually a Red Hat, because they are packaging Python earlier and testing the packages they package against the new Python. So they run into these problems quite fast.
Oh, cool. So you don't have to be proactive. You got somebody else
I am proactive, but not that early. I usually wait into the betas or okay. maybe into the RCs before I start working on that. Definitely not in the alphas. And I think that Red Hat usually already starts in the alphas. That's too early for me. It's too broken.
Okay. But RCs, what do they come out like three months ahead of time or something? Or
I don't know the numbers anymore. But yeah. We are on RC2 right now.
Okay. So Adders is working great with Python 3.11?
Yes, it does.
Okay. Cool. The thing that gets that hits me occasionally is so I've got a PyTest plugin. I've got a few PyTest plugins, but one of them that actually is kind of naughty and uses internals of PyTest, and that's so I got to test it against the new stuff all the time because it might break. And for a while I needed some help because PyTest for a while was straddling Python 3.6 and earlier, I think it did 3.5 for a while. PyTest now is 3.7 and above, I believe. And that was good because the plugin I had like a different, had to support, like it had code that was like switched on which Python version. And I hate having code like that in my code. So, luckily that's gone out now, but because, well, actually when
it's
I
gonna
was
going to come back, by the way,
is it going to come back?
Yeah, it's for me to say, I hate it. I'm so happy when I drop a version and just remove such a branch, but it comes a new version. And for example, now when you add 3.11 and you use TOML, so of course you can always depend on TOMLKit, but it's much nicer to use the TOML lib, which now came into the standard library.
Yeah.
So now welcome to if sys version info smaller 3.3.11.
Okay, but every time I have to do that, one of the issues that comes up is now my coverage is my code coverage isn't complete unless I combine coverage. So you've got an article on, I think it's you that has an article on combining coverage for multiple, how to basically how to do that. And so I just have it bookmarked and I'm like, whenever I need to do that, I'll go read that again. I've done it enough times, but it is it's kind of cool to have that resource. So please don't take that down. Anyway, kind of getting off in the weeds now, but yeah, I guess I'm super glad that we had a chance to talk. I'm interested in Town Crier. I think that Town Crier is less scary than I thought it was. When you first look at it, it's like there's all these numbers and the special snippets and how does it work? But the workflow of you just add this file snippet and then I've got a template. So there's some setup work that I have to do. But the rest of the workflow isn't tons for your day-to-day life, right?
No, your day-to-day life is literally just creating the snippets. You can use Town Crier for that too. There's a Town Crier create and then, for example, --- content, and then you can write the content right in there, or --edit, and then we'll start an editor, and you fill out your snippet and you're done. So for day-to-day editing, it's absolutely no problem at all. The only annoying thing is that you have to open a pull request first to know the number for the news fragment. But other than that, it's
okay. So if I do it like a Town Crier create, is it going to ask me for the merge number or something? Or
yeah, you pass it as an argument. Okay. So you say Town Crier create 42.bugfix.rst or something like that.
Okay, so I think I might play with it even on single projects just to see, because I think it would be better if more people used things like Town Crier and or Scriv or whatever works for people's mind state. I'm kind of leaning towards so there's some projects that don't keep a changelog in the repository; they keep it as a it's just a release note on GitHub, since GitHub does release notes.
Yeah, they usually use the commit messages then. You can automatically create changelog, and then it just uses the commit messages. As we established before, this is not great for the users.
But it also doesn't live with the code. So if I clone the code, that's
well, it's the commit messages, so it's part of Git, right?
Yeah, okay. So I can do a git git log and see those anyway.
Yeah, that's what it does. That's literally what it does. Nothing else. This release thing.
Oh, yeah. That's horrible. I don't want to do that.
Yeah, don't.
So I think this. Yeah. Anyway, I'm glad you are on the case of trying to make kind of polish up the documentation and the onboarding a little bit.
Yeah, I would love if you would have a look at the pull request, which I opened just tonight. And okay. I mean, it sounds like it was written for you. So feel free to give some feedback if anything is unclear and we can improve it further.
I love being the major customer. I'll definitely check it out. Thanks. And if I have any questions, I'll ask. So thanks a lot. And I'll let you enjoy the rest of your evening and we'll talk later. Thank you for listening to Test & Code. Let's keep in touch. Head over to pythontest.com/contact to reach out to me, or /newsletter so that I can reach you, or /support if you'd like to, get a course or something. That's all for now. Now go out and test something.